Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Monday afternoon, November the 19th. Now, here's something that you will not hear anyplace else. A lot of times on conservative talk radio, Christian radio, you hear about media bias, the liberal bias of the mainstream media. Well, we got three examples to lay before you here in the next few minutes of the program. Not so much of the liberal bias, but simply how the media doesn't get the issues surrounding religion. Just don't do this. We do this on a regular basis with several guests from GetReligion.org. Our guest today, George Conger, he formerly served as a British correspondent for the Jerusalem Post and the overseas correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. He's a contributor to GetReligion.org. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd.
You say that this recent New York Times article on adultery and its history is not so much a news article as it is the Times midweek sermon. What do you mean by that?
Well, the Times isn't doing any real reporting in this story, which is about state laws on adultery. What the Times is doing is telling us what to think about adultery. In other words, the article is a continued sort of lesson on how we as a society have moved past the point where we need to have laws about such things as adultery or marital infidelity. And in other words, it's basically a story. Come on, people, get with it. Get with the times. You don't need to be so old-fashioned and square.
Now, you also mentioned that a almost perfect response to the New York Times slant on this came from a magazine, New Criterion. Tell us about it.
Well, the New Criterion, it's a monthly arts and literary magazine, has a blog site, and James Bowman, its media critic, took up this article, and he said the way the New York Times discussed adultery was very much like the way George Costanza, the character on Seinfeld, discussed sexual immorality. In other words, there is a very famous episode that's going on 20 years now from the original broadcast, where George is brought before his boss at the publishing firm, and he's taken to task for having sex with a cleaning woman, and George's response was that wrong? I didn't know that was wrong. I mean, I've worked at a lot of places, and I tell you, if I knew it was wrong, I wouldn't do it. There's that, but George Costanza's response to his having been caught out doing something wrong at work is very much the way the New York Times is responding with adultery. Is it still wrong? Well, I mean, if we knew it was wrong, well, that would be something different. The New York Times, where I really think the base of all this is the New York Times has a very pronounced moral compass, and it's an attitude towards issues ranging from homosexuality to adultery that are very progressive, very liberal, and if you don't share that attitude, you're somehow strange or not with it or some sort of religious troglodyte with your knuckles dragging along the ground.
So it's kind of, do you believe it's a genuinely not understanding how anyone could have or presently regard adultery as wrong, or do you believe that they're simply, well, it's disingenuous? They're acting as though, why would anyone consider this to be, you know, positively medieval? Which do you think it is?
Well, I think I'm an Episcopalian, so I'll say both. What my colleagues at Get Religion, Molly Ziegler Hemingway, has a line about National Geographic reporting. And what that means is papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post will write a story about this sort of strange and exotic subspecies called evangelicals. And they'll go in and write these stories about these strange people who live far away in places like New Jersey, who have these customs that are just so extraordinary. And it's as if the National Geographic is going to deepest, darkest Africa, writing about tribal customs of the Hutus or the Watutsis. It's that attitude of sort of peering in at people who are somehow less sophisticated, less with it, less on the ball. So there's part of the story, I believe, is a disingenuousness, as you say, about the place adultery plays in the morality of the vast majority of Americans, where it doesn't seem to play that role in the moral compass of New York Times writers. And also, there's this very strong preaching element, which is, look what we've been in the past, where we had laws, shock, horror, dismay, that were based upon the Christian religion. And we as a society need to get past that to a brighter future where religion has nothing to do with our moral code. That's the lesson the New York Times is preaching.
Now, we talked about this before, and I think you've said that you have no problem with advocacy journalism. In fact, you speak about it in the European context as, you know, something that actually has a positive force in society. What's wrong with the New York Times doing this? It's just advocacy journalism.
Because they don't know that they're doing it. See, in Europe, you've got newspapers that are unapologetically liberal or conservative. You have Catholic newspapers. You have communist newspapers. You know what you're getting when you buy the newspaper. And an advocacy... Now, see, this is an advocacy article. It lays out only one side of the issue and presses that issue home as if it were an argument. It's advocating for a particular point of view. Now, if the New York Times had sort of a disclaimer that we are a paper, you know, that supports this cause and this agenda and this worldview, that's fine. Then you would know that this is where they're coming from. Then you would be able to take a second paper that may have a conservative way of looking at things, and basically between the two, you would get both sides of an argument. Well, classical American journalism is based on one story having both arguments in there. So you, the reader, will be able to see both sides speaking clearly. New York Times doesn't do that anymore, and it doesn't acknowledge that it's biased. That's the problem. It won't acknowledge its biases and suppositions.
So you have no real problem in principle with a bias as long as it is admitted.
In principle, yes. I mean, honesty is the best policy. I know that's a little hackneyed, but it is. It's the best policy. If you know where someone is coming from, and you know the argument is being couched in terms that they wish to present, you're able to hear them and not hear it with suspicion. But when you read the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Los Angeles Times, not every single story, but stories that are, if you will, in the field of the culture wars in our country, you need many people, including myself, read them now with a very jaundiced eye, because we know that they're coming from a certain cultural supposition, a political supposition, a moral supposition, yet they won't admit that, but they're pretending to be balanced and fair and offering all sides when they don't.
Another example that you have recently written on about Get Religion is another article in the New York Times, Gay Pakistanis Still in Shadows, and you say it's another example of this kind of blind spot of the New York Times.
Yeah, the New York Times, I know your listeners will be shocked to hear, the New York Times has written an article that is supportive of the gay subculture of Pakistan. I know that's a shock to many people, but the New York Times does seem to find these things. And first off, the New York Times wrote this article as if this was something brand new, whereas you can go back for 20 years and read articles or listen to the National Public Radio about the gay subculture in Pakistan. But what was so glaringly, obviously wrong about this article was that the New York Times omitted the word Islam. They're talking all about the culture of Pakistan and homosexuality, yet nowhere did they talk about the fact that Islam is what drives Pakistan's culture. And over the last 25 years, with the influx of money from Saudi Arabia, which has changed the nature of Pakistani Islam from being a very tolerant religion dominated by the Sufi strand of Islam to a very strict brand dominated by a Wahhabist interpretation of Islam. The New York Times is totally clueless about the religious elements of what's going on and writes about these gay Pakistanis if this were a group of people in the West Village, not in Peshawar.
How does that happen? I mean, how do you miss that as a journalist?
Well, you miss it because you're not aware that it's even out there. So if you come out of a particular worldview and of a particular mindset where everything that happens in Manhattan is the norm, you're only going to see things through that lens of sort of the Upper East Side. And if you're not aware of religion, if you're not aware of history, if you're not aware of what newspaper reporters used to call context, all you're doing is giving an extended travel piece. Here is my adventure among the gay subculture in Peshawar or in Lahore, rather than here is the existence, here is the lives of these people, here are the pressures that they undergo, and here's where it comes from. That the Taliban, that in 1990, Pakistan introduced laws, Sharia laws, that says homosexuality must be punished by being whipped or being beheaded or being jailed. 1990 is when these laws came into being. And it's all based on the conservative understandings of Islamic law. Instead, the New York Times talks about the fact that in 1860, the British introduced sodomy laws for India. Well, you know, I don't think homosexuality is a problem caused by the English. I know the French think so, but I don't think really that's true.
George Conger is our guest of GetReligion.org. When we come back, we'll talk with him about media coverage of same-sex marriage in Spain. It's Monday afternoon, November the 19th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. After a brief conversation with George, we're going to get into that sermon review, a sermon preached by Pastor David Peterson of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, Indiana. For the end of the church year, the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. We'll be right back.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Dutch Slippery Slope.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
When advocates of euthanasia sought to legalize it in the Netherlands, they asserted it would only apply to the terminally ill. Well, as Lisha Corbella recently pointed out, the latest statistics show that the Dutch have traveled far down the slippery slope. In 2011, nearly 3,700 Dutch citizens were euthanized. That is more than double the figure from 2006. What's more, the data shows that some were euthanized for relatively minor things, such as clinical depression and mental illness. Even worse, about 500 people were euthanized without their consent. We pray America does not start down this slippery slope.
To join us in our battle for life, go online to sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. George Conger is our guest. We're talking about the New York Times coverage of same-sex couples, gays in Pakistan. In just a minute, we'll talk about coverage of same-sex marriage in Spain as well. George Conger of GetReligion.org. George, so the whole story here on the gays in Pakistan is that they are living under two legal codes, British and Islamic, but the one that the New York Times missed was the dominant one, Islamic Sharia.
Yeah, there's a secular legal code which has sodomy laws on the books, which basically haven't been enforced for about 150 years. And then there's the Sharia law code, which is being enforced, which is what is being used to persecute Christians with the blasphemy laws, which is being what is used to persecute minority Muslim groups like the Shia or the Ahmadiyya Muslims. Those are the laws that are in effect, and those are the laws that are vigorously vigorously enforced by the state. And the New York Times, well, here's another example from that story. Last year, our State Department, and here's your tax dollar at work, held a gay awareness festival in Pakistan. You know, great way to spend money by the U.S. government, and while they had this gay festival, there was a protest outside, and people protested and said this was terrible. That was reported in the Times article. What the Times neglected to report was who was protesting, and it was religious leaders in Pakistan. A Taliban-affiliated religious clerics who were saying that the Americans are killing us with their drones and they're poisoning our culture by promoting homosexuality, and that is wrong because the Quran says that it is evil and God will punish sodomites. The New York Times happened to miss that. That's incredible.
A couple questions for you here. One more on this one, and then I have another story I'd like to ask you about. You say that what we have here is the Times defining sexuality such that true gayness is found only in its Western version. What do you mean by that with about a minute?
Okay. New York Times talks about Western-educated, affluent gay Pakistanis. And then it talks about older or rural people with same-sex attractions who are not homosexual in the same way that gay Westerners are homosexual. And the New York Times is arguing that to be truly homosexual, you have to be a homosexual like we understand homosexuality, not like rural Pakistan understands homosexuality.
The final story I wanted to ask you about, George, is a story out of Spain on, again, homosexuals in Spain. What's your two-minute critique of the coverage there?
Spanish newspapers are very much advocacy papers. You get one point of view. And in Spain, on November, the day after the U.S. election, November 7th, the Spanish newspapers all had the front headline of the Spanish Constitutional Court has legalized gay marriage. The conservative government had brought a challenge to the law passed by the former socialist government, and the newspapers, the liberal newspapers, all talked about the law, and they neglected to mention the fact that the Spanish Catholic Church had vigorously fought tooth and nail the introduction of gay marriage, and they were the ones providing all the arguments, moral and legal, against it, and that was omitted by the liberal paper, El País. But if you went to ABC, which is the conservative paper, you had all the conservative arguments why it was wrong and very few of the liberal arguments. See, that's advocacy journalism. You got to take two to get the full story. And in New York City, you only got one, and you don't get the full story.
George Conger formerly served as a British correspondent for the Jerusalem Post and the overseas correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. He's a contributor to GetReligion.org. George, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you so much.